So on the first day, we discuss Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. On the second day, we discussed Bhakti. Which extends into Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana in different features. And then we began Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami about Abhideya, or the process of devotion and service. And after hearing about the position of bhakti in relation to other processes and the efficiency of bhakti in freeing one from maya, we're now coming to the crucial point. The crucial point at which the living entity gets bhakti, or at which bhakti is aroused in the conditioned soul. Here, Lord Chaitanya tells Sanatana Goswami that when the living entity becomes fortunate, he can begin the process of devotional service. Earlier in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya gave the same instruction to Rupa Goswami. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. Brahmanda Brahmite means Brahmanda. What is Brahmanda?
Universe.
Universe. Universal creation of Lord Brahma. There are so many Brahmandas, not only one. The scientists may not know, but we know from the scriptures that there are so many universes. And the conditioned souls are wandering throughout the various universes in different planetary systems. Some are higher and some are lower, and in different species of life. But when he becomes fortunate, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, he gets the seed of devotion. Now we see there are so many living entities who are wandering in the universe, but they don't begin the process of bhakti. Very few conditioned souls actually begin the process of devotional service. So the question will arise, why do some get the seed of bhakti or begin the process and not others. So Lord Chaitanya has mentioned the word bhagyavan, when the conditioned soul becomes fortunate. But what is the exact meaning of bhagya or good fortune? Someone may say that good fortune is produced by pious activities, shubha karma. But can we accept that bhakti is the result of karma? No, because bhakti is independent of karma again. If bhakti was caused by material pious activities, it would become subordinate to karma, which is the theory of karma mimamsa. According to the theory of karma mimamsa, if one performs good works, he must get the result. Therefore, karma mimamsa is considered atheistic, because they don't accept the supreme independent will of God. They think that if there is God, he has to give the result. So we don't need God, we only have to work. But bhakti is not achieved, or good fortune by which one gets bhakti is not achieved by material pious activities. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has mentioned three types of pious activities. One type is called karmonumukha, one is called jnanumukha, and the other is called bhaktiumukha. One type of pious activity leads to material enjoyment. Another type of pious activity leads to liberation. And another type of pious activity leads to devotional service. Now, what is the pious activity that leads to devotional service? And how does one have the good fortune of doing it? So that is the subject being discussed in the instructions today. Now, if good fortune is not created by pious activities, then how does it arise? Does it arise by chance, without any rhyme or reason? Like the scientists say that the universe was created by chance. Actually, chance has no meaning. Chance has no meaning at all. It is not an answer. So we cannot accept that good fortune is produced by pious activities or by chance. So what is the actual meaning of good fortune, by which one gets bhakti? Someone may say that the cause of the appearance of bhakti is the mercy of Krishna. But here again the question will arise, Why does Krishna give bhakti to some and not to others? Krishna is the source of all living entities. He is the father of all living entities. So he must be equal to all. He cannot be partial to some and give bhakti to them and withhold bhakti from others. So we cannot accept that the mercy of the Lord is the answer to the question why some get bhakti and not others. At least there must be some further consideration. If we read Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami, which we are expected to have read, we will find that Lord Chaitanya says that the living entity achieves good fortune by the association of devotees. But here again, the same question will arise, because not everyone who gets the association of devotees begins the process of devotional service. We meet so many people that they don't begin the process of devotional service. Srila Prabhupada also met so many people. So what is the reason that some get bhakti and others don't get it? Here someone may give the answer that the cause is the mercy of the devotee. And someone could raise the objection that if the devotee gives bhakti to some and not to others, then the devotee is partial. He's not dealing with everyone the same. But if we see the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is also quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita verses that we will read in the next 2 days, we will find that the Madhyam Bhakta does make distinctions. Prema Maitri Kripo Peksha Yakaroti Samadhyama. He gives his love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He makes friendship with devotees. He gives his mercy to innocent persons, and he neglects envious persons. So it is the function of the Madhyam Bhakta to give mercy, and not to all, only to some. And there can be no fault. We cannot find fault with the Madhyam Bhakta for doing so, because that is the characteristic of the Madhyam Bhakta, and that is the duty of the Madhyam Bhakta. The Uttama Bhakta, he will not show mercy to some and not to others. Why?
Because he thinks that everybody else is better servant of Krishna than himself, so he has no right to instruct or give mercy to them.
Yes. He sees everyone the same, and he sees that everyone already has bhakti. He sees that everyone is already serving Krishna. So there's no question of giving mercy. He thinks they are better servants of Krishna than he. So no question of mercy. If the Madhyam Bhakta is to give mercy, he will have to come to the platform of the... if the Uttama Bhakta wants to give mercy, he will have to come to the platform of the Madhyam Bhakta. He will have to act on the platform of Madhyam Bhakta. And Kanishta Bhakta, he himself is still on the material platform. He himself is in the category of innocent person. He's not really in the category of bhakta. He's beginning or trying to become. So he's not capable of giving mercy. So the function of giving mercy belongs to the Madhyam Bhakta. And when the Madhyam Bhakta prays to the Lord to show mercy on some soul, then the Lord's mercy follows. Therefore it is said, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. By the mercy of Guru, one gets the mercy of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya had one devotee named Vasudev Dutta, who was very compassionate to the fallen souls. And he approached Lord Chaitanya and told him that, I'm so much aggrieved when I see the suffering of the conditioned souls. I want to accept all the sinful reactions of them on my head. I will suffer all the sinful reactions, and you let them be liberated. You set them free. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments that if we compare the mercy of Vaishnavas like Vasudev Dutta or Haridas Thakur, even to the mercy of such personalities like Jesus Christ, we find that they are thousands and millions of times more merciful even than Jesus Christ. Because Jesus Christ was ready to accept the sinful reactions of his disciples or his followers. But Vasudev Dutta was ready to accept the sinful reactions of every living entity in the whole universe. We can just imagine. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of ordinary persons in family life, that sometimes the husband or the father, for the sake of the family, will steal or cheat. But if you ask the other family members, are you prepared to accept the reaction? They won't be prepared. Although the reactions are just of one person who was doing it for them, but still they won't accept. But Jesus Christ, he was prepared to accept the reactions of those who surrendered to him. But here we see Vasudev Dutta, he's prepared to accept the reactions of every living entity in the universe. We cannot conceive what it means. And when Lord Chaitanya heard his proposal, tears began to stream from his eyes, and he embraced Vasudev Dutta. And he told him that there is no need for you to suffer their reactions. Just by your desire, they can be liberated. Because Krishna has no other desire than to fulfill the desires of his pure devotees. So if you desire the deliverance of all living entities, then they will be delivered. So when the devotee prays to the Lord to be merciful upon some fallen soul, then the Lord responds and he gives mercy. We also find the same type of incident in Krishna's pastimes. After Krishna chastised the Kaliya serpent, the wives of the serpent, who were devotees of Krishna, prayed to the Lord to give mercy to the snake. And because they were great devotees, the Lord showed mercy upon him. And he also, he was saved and he became engaged in devotional service. Of course, he was already purified by the kicks of the lotus feet of the Lord. That freed him of sinful reactions. But still, when the wives of Kaliyanag prayed for the mercy of Lord Krishna, Krishna gave mercy. And Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says that at the end, Kaliyanag offered his services to Lord Krishna. And sometimes when the Lord appears and he has to go to Mathura, he does so riding on the hoods of Kaliya. Another example from Lord Chaitanya's, no, not Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, in one sense Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. But there is one king in Bengal named Samudra Singh, and he wanted to have darshan of Lord Krishna. So when Bhima was going throughout the world to establish Yudhisthira as the emperor, he came to Bengal. And generally all the kings would surrender without any fight. But Samudra Sen thought that if I fight very well against Bhima, then definitely Lord Krishna will come and give protection to Bhima, and I'll be able to have darshan of Lord Krishna. So he decided he won't surrender. So he fought very heroically against Bhimsen. So much so that Bhimsen could not defeat him. Not only he could not defeat him, but he was himself in trouble. So then he began to pray to Lord Krishna, that I've gone all over the world, I've defeated so many great warriors, and some insignificant king of Bengal I'm not able to defeat. It will be a great humiliation for me if I do not defeat him. So you please help me. Then Lord Krishna came, and he appeared before Samudra Sen. Actually, Bhim Sen could not see him. Only Samudra Sen saw him. And when Samudra Sen saw him, he put down his bows and arrows, all types of weapons, and he began to weep and offer prayers to Krishna. So when Bhima saw the scene, he was very happy. He thought that Samudra Sen has become overwhelmed with fear. He sat down his weapon and he's weeping. And so he became very happy. This was in Navadvip. So then Lord Krishna revealed his form as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he showed His form as Radha and Krishna, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the combined form of Radha and Krishna. So, although he approached in an indirect way, but by the mercy of Bhima, he was able to get the darshan of Krishna, because Bhima prayed for Krishna to appear. Samudra Sen, to show mercy to, to reciprocate with the prayers of Bhima, Krishna came. And Samudra Sen was able to see him. So the mercy of Krishna follows the mercy of the bhakta. Because Krishna is bhakta vatsala, he's very affectionate to his devotees, and he always wants to please his devotees. And this is not a fault in Krishna, this is a qualification of Krishna.
So, did I understand right when you're saying that those conditioned souls without any bhakti are completely dependent on the Vaishnava?
One cannot begin the process of bhakti without the mercy of Vaishnava. Now, Rupa Goswami says that generally devotional service is continued from the previous life. So there are devotees who have natural attraction for literature like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So they are supposed to have performed devotional service in the past life, but they could not complete it, most likely due to some offense at the lotus feet of some Vaishnava. They were not able to successfully complete devotional service. So they took birth again. But in the present life, they have another chance to continue. And their natural attraction is symptomatic of their previous advancement.
So, but are there people who don't have any pious, I'm sure there are, who don't have any pious credit from past life, from any devotional service since millions of years? So they're not naturally attracted to Krishna.
But if they get the mercy of the Vaishnava, they can begin. That's the whole point. Actually, now we come to the real point, which is that bhakti is independent. You see, bhakti is not dependent on anything. And now we'll come to the main verse that we're going to discuss today. This is text 50. This verse describes how one begins devotional service. This describes the awakening of Shraddha. Shraddha is the beginning of bhakti. Up to now we've been discussing some preliminary topics, but now we've come to the actual point where bhakti begins. Yadrichaya matkatado jata shraddhas tuyapuman na nirvino natishato bhakti yogos yasiddhida. Yadrichaya, by some good fortune. Actually, the word yadrichaya has many meanings in the Sanskrit dictionary, and even in the translation, Srila Prabhupada has written, somehow or other. But one meaning of yadrichaya, which is compatible with the nature of bhakti, is independent. or by one's own sweet will. And in the first canto, in one place, Srila Prabhupada translates the word as free. That bhakti is free to appear wherever and whenever she wants. Similarly, the bhakta is free to travel anywhere he wants, by his own sweet will. Yadrichaya can be translated as by his own sweet will. So, the explanations that we've given so far are not incompatible with the word Yadrichaya, which means that bhakti is independent, just like Krishna is independent. So bhakti, which is the energy of Krishna, is also independent. And she can appear whenever and wherever she likes. No one can force her to appear. As it is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Savai Pum Song Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Adai Tuki. Ahaituki. What is ahaituki? No cause. There is no cause. So if we say that the cause of the appearance of bhakti is the sweet will of bhakti, is there any contradiction to the other statement that the cause of bhakti is the mercy of the devotee?
No, because bhakti dwelling in the heart of the devotee.
Yes.
Bestows the bhakti.
The bhakta has bhakti in his heart. So when the bhakta shows mercy, it's only because he has bhakti in his heart. If he didn't have bhakti in his heart, there'd be no question of showing mercy. And when bhakti wants the bhakta to show mercy, she inspires the bhakta from within his heart to pray for mercy. Then the bhakta's mercy comes and the Lord's mercy comes. So bhakti comes from bhakti. Bhaktiya sanjataya bhakti. Bhakti comes from bhakti. Now sometimes Srila Prabhupada has given the example that if the speaker is sincere and the audience is sincere, then bhakti will arise. So there's also some in general, there's also some consideration for the audience also. And we also have practical experience when we preach. Not everyone takes, some take, but not everyone takes. And we may not be so powerful that just by praying to Krishna, Krishna will. But we may be. Sometimes we pray for someone to take a book and they take a book. So here, there's some consideration. And this is very important if we consider the definition of bhakti. Yadrichaya matkatado jata shraddha tuyapuma na nirvina, not falsely detached, nati sakta, and not too attached to material existence. So this makes the person eligible for bhakti. He should not have too much false renunciation, and he should not have too much material attachment. Because if he has too much material attachment, he'll go for karma. He'll go for fruitive activities for material enjoyment. And if he has too much material disgust, then he'll go for jnana, He wants liberation. So he shouldn't have too much of either. And bhakti is without, uttama bhakti is without contamination of jnana and karma. So he shouldn't be too much inclined either towards karma or jnana. He shouldn't be too inclined to material enjoyment or artificial renunciation. He should be in between. So this verse describes the eligibility of someone for bhakti, how the person gets bhakti. And that is, he shouldn't be too attached to artificial austerities. He shouldn't be too attached to material sense gratification. And he should have some good fortune, or in other words, the mercy of devotees. Then Shraddha, which is the beginning of bhakti, awakens. Then Shraddha matures to bhava, bhava matures to prema, gets success.
I just wonder how this material condition of the candidate, not being too attached or detached, could be conducive for the spiritual sort of thing taking place and receiving that.
The example is given that one can plant the seed in any soil, but if the soil is not prepared, then the seed may not take root. But if we prepare the soil, then, you know, the seed is expected to take root, sprout, grow, bear fruit, and everything. So sometimes we preach to people who are either attached to enjoyment or renunciation. For example, at the Sunday feasts in Boston, we used to get people who were into some sort of tapasya or yoga. I remember several times preaching to them to take the feast because they didn't take grains, or they didn't take milk, they didn't take sugar or something. So we would have to break their false attachment and explain that Krishna Prasad is higher or more beneficial. Or anyway, tempt them so that they lost control and And then, of course, there are people who are too attached to enjoyment, so we preach to them how the body is temporary, how we are by nature spiritual, and our real relationship is with Krishna, who's the Supreme Spirit, not with the temporary Maya, and so on. So by preaching, we break their false attachments. And then when their false attachments are broken sufficiently, they can take to the process.
So that condition which they have achieved somehow or other of being in that state, they achieve that through bhakti or mukhi sukriti, is it? Or is that just a material?
Yeah. Bhakti or mukhi sukriti means agyata sukriti. Agyata sukriti means unknown pious activities or unknown devotional service. That someone doesn't know what devotional service is. Like sometimes I think of the people who helped Srila Prabhupada in the beginning. They didn't know what devotional service was. They didn't know what pure devotee was. But they saw, oh, some nice gentleman has come, some foreigner has come to New York. I should help him. And we read how, like at one program, some man helped Srila Prabhupada to distribute books. So he probably didn't know really what is bhakti, what is bhakta, or anything. But he somehow did some service, unknowingly he did some service. And many times devotees, especially when they go to some new place or they're in some helpless condition, people come forward and help them, just out of goodwill, without real knowledge of what they're doing. So these are very significant acts that help the person become receptive. Yeah, that's it.
But when a person might achieve that sort of condition in a general sense, materially, not being too attached or detached, through material, just through some totally material sort of history. Here we're saying that it's only that type of state which has been achieved through unknowing devotional service.
Any comments for the Chandra?
Seems like this kind of the mood under being not too attached and not too detached can come about just through, you know, experiencing material nature. Because it doesn't mean that the person has bhakti, but the person just is a little bit disgusted with and disappointed with the material world, but not so much that it becomes a gyani or some kind of ascetic.
There are many people who are too attached or too detached who don't get bhakti. They're pious Gujaratis. I mean, I don't know why I thought of them, but they're pious Gujaratis. They're not too attached and they're not too detached. But they don't really take to the process.
I understood that the accumulation of the jhana sukriti gradually causes within the mind a kind of diminishing diminishing of the influence of material nature to the point where one can actually be attracted to devotional service when he finally comes in contact.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada how we came to Krishna consciousness. And, Srila Prabhupada said, by good fortune. And then the devotee said, well, we never perform pious activities, because generally good fortune comes from pious activities. Then Srila Prabhupada said, I created your good fortune. Then the devotee said, but there's so many pious Hindus, they worship Tulsi Devi, they chant the holy names, they read Bhagavad Gita, but they don't take to bhakti like we have. So Srila Prabhupada said that whatever they're doing will not go in vain. It will all accumulate. And when it reaches a certain stage, then they can also take to pure devotional service. But then Srila Prabhupada said that it's not automatic. Because otherwise it would be karma mimamsa, that by doing this and doing that I have to get liberated. They form a cloud. And then when the cloud is full of water, it pours down rain. So he's saying by pious activities, the type that leads to devotional service, the cloud keeps getting more and more drops of water in it. And then when the cloud is laden with water, it will shower forth and the person will begin devotional service. But he said sometimes even a very big cloud doesn't pour rain. And sometimes even a small cloud will. So he said ultimately there's another consideration, there's a controller who ultimately decides. But generally, when there's enough accumulation of agyata sukriti or bhakti unmukha sukriti, the person will be able to do devotional service. And that's why we encourage everyone, even if they can't take fully, to do something. Srila Prabhupada said every time they come to the Sunday program, it's like 1 cent, 1 cent, 1 cent, 1 cent, 1 cent, and it all adds up. And one day they'll have $100, they'll be able to do something.
These pious activities that we're referring to, they're not material at all. I mean, usually when we say pious activities, we think this is some type of material thing. These are actually devotional activities.
They're devotional activities.
Devotion, so
yeah, they're devotional activities. Mm-hmm. But bhakti is anushilanam, it's a continuous cultivation. So they are performing items of devotional service, but they haven't really come to the point of bhakti. But when bhakti begins, then they will do continuous service. There will be no interruption. Ahaituki apratihata. Yes.
Mentioned that according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, these three kinds of pious activity, karma vimukha, jnana vimukha, and bhakti vimukha.
Yeah, well, he. It's in the purport on page 350.
Could you speak a little more about what activity?
Well, Harinam Chintamani, he uses similar terms. Bhakti Unmukha is the same. But in Harinam Chintamani, instead of Bhoga Unmukha, he says Karma Unmukha. In other words, pious activities in the category of karma. And instead of Moksha Unmukha, he says Jnanamukha in Harinam Chintamani. So activities in the category of jnana. You know, pious activities, giving in charity, so many things, performing sacrifices. That's karma. And jnana means it may mean discussion, or it may mean meditation, that I'm not like the yogis in meditation. They meditate, I'm not the foot, I'm not the leg, I'm not the stomach, I'm not the arm, I'm not the head, I'm not the mind. What am I? I'm the soul. That's meditation. And by philosophy, they analyze the different elements, Sankhya, and they conclude, I'm not any of the elements, but I'm something different from the material elements. I'm spirit. So by Gyan, or yoga, they come to the understanding, I'm not the body, I'm not matter. Bhakti. Bhakti come to the conclusion that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna.
They take a book.
One of the earthly examples is if someone just happens to fast on the Kadasi day, there's a book.
They get credit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd just like to discuss a little more this point you're making, Maharaj, about the actual source of bhakti. You mentioned how when a bhakta is approaching a person, a candidate, should we say, that if the conditions are right, the bhakta will pray to bhakti within his own heart to please bestow mercy upon this conditioned soul.
No, no. Yeah. The bhakti within his heart will inspire him to pray to Krishna.
Will inspire him to pray, right. Yeah. So, therefore, whether... Does that in turn depend to some degree upon the attitude of the candidate? Because the Madhyam Bhakta will deal with the person bestowing mercy or will neglect that person depending on that person's attitude. So is that person's attitude in itself the determining factor about whether bhakti is going to become manifest or not?
Yeah.
So, to take it one stage further, does that then mean that the way in which the bhakti, the preacher, deals with that person will affect how that person acts? In other words, will affect whether that person is acting favorably or unfavorably?
Yeah. If the devotee is expert, he can encourage the person. And if he's not expert, he may discourage the person.
So a really essential factor in all of this is actually the attitude of the person. That's the one of the key factors of the fact.
Yeah. The degree to which bhakti is manifest. In other words, if I'm a neophyte, then bhakti won't be so manifest in me. And I may not deal properly with people, and I may alienate some people. But as I make more advancement, I can see them. I can see everything more clearly. I see them more clearly as parts and parcels of Krishna. And I can see their potential for service better. I can see how I can help them better. Yes?
What is the criterion? How to decide whether this renunciation is artificial or otherwise? For example, Raghunathas gave away everything that adds to the satisfaction of karma. Was that artificial?
He gave away everything that
adds to the satisfaction of the tongue.
Oh.
Causes satisfaction of the tongue. Any delicacy, food, or anything like that. He used to have rice that is rejected even by the cows. He took out the inner lump of rice from the bigger lump, and that with a pinch of salt he used to take it. Is that artificial? Is that me?
No, for him it was not artificial. If we tried to imitate him, it might be artificial for us. Because he was advanced.
Unless we try to follow the examples, how we can get into those habits? This culture, as you say, the culture, cultivation of it. Unless we imitate those examples, how we can do that?
Is that the real criterion for whether something's artificially renounced or properly renounced, whether it's pleasing to Krishna?
Yes, that is the question.
I mean, it wouldn't be please Krishna very much if I ate rat and rice, probably, but for example, I guess it's
this is pleasing.
Yeah?
It seems to me that this is the import of the next verses, which describe that it's depending on the mercy of the devotee, because, like, for instance, Srila Prabhupada gave us the instruction out of time and circumstance. If you just eat nothing but Krishna prasadam, you know, for your whole life, then eventually you'll come to that state. In other words, it will naturally come from following the orders of a bona fide spiritual master, rather than trying to jump ahead to some, to imitate some more advanced stage of devotional service. If one takes the orders of the spiritual master, gradually you'll come to that stage.
Very good answer. In other words, the spiritual master knows the disciple and the present conditions. So he sets the example or gives the instructions that are appropriate. So what Raghunath Das Goswami and other associates of Lord Chaitanya could do 500 years ago, we are not able to do now. So probably the best thing for us is to follow Srila Prabhupada's example and instructions.
There's one proverb in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Prabhupada says that someone may be thinking that he would go around in Vrindavan and collect Madhukari. Prabhupada said, please just take Mahaprasad and Krishna Balaram temple.
What's the cause of one becoming Bali Sheshu?
Innocent. He's asking what is the criteria for being innocent.
I think we should just now conclude the present discussion, because in 2 days we're discussing Kanistha, Madhyama, and Uttama, and then we can go deeply into the verses. So there's just two more verses left. I mean, there are more verses, but I'm going to take two more. Text 54. There are many famous verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita in Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. And they are like keys to different sections of Lord Chaitanya's instructions. So this is a very important verse for the section that we just discussed. And we should learn some of the verses. On the exam you may be asked to recall some of the verses. So like Jive Swarupai Krishna Aditya Das, the first one that you copied from the board, about our constitutional position. Then yesterday's Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andhakar, Krishna's light, Godhead is darkness, where there's Godhead, there's no nations. And this also, sadhu sangha sarva shastra kai, lava matra sadhu sangha sarva siddhihai. The verdict of all revealed scriptures is that by even a moment's association with a pure devotee, one can attain all success. How is it possible?
Well, I can just think of one pastime. This is a pastime of Buddha. Certainly, Prabhupada, of the explanation of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explained that previously Putana was the daughter of Bali Maharaj. And what happened was in Bangladesh, she saw this boy and she was thinking that in the future she would very much like to breastfeed this milk. This boy. And then later when her father was found out by ropes, she was becoming very infuriated. And she was thinking, oh, if that will happen, I'll definitely smear my breast nipples with poison. So because of that mixed, like first she had a little bodily infection and later she had some demoniac propensities. So because she was associating with a Mahajan like Bali Maharaj and also her grandfather Kalan Maharaj, so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained that she got the reaction of her defense mentality, but by that association eventually she was elevated to this global role where she was in a position of Krishna as well.
Srila Prabhupada says that if you associate with the devotee for a moment, he'll tell you about devotional service. And if you take to devotional service, then you'll achieve all success.